Oh, there's one.
Oh, wow.
Oh my god, oh my god.
Okay.
Uh-oh.
Did you really think this out?
Hi.
I mean, there's no rhyme or reason.
It's just, I don't know.
Okay, you with me? Welcome to Essential Salt from Maine Public Radio, a 6-episode showcase of beautifully crafted stories made by students at the Salt Institute for Documentary Studies in Portland, Maine. I'm Jess Miller, one of the folks that makes Maine Public Radio, and I'm also a proud Salt grad.
This episode has two powerful and very different stories about women who made deeply personal decisions that ended up having a big impact on their lives and their communities. And while the circumstances and the outcomes couldn't be less alike, both stories ask what it means to belong to a place, specifically a place in Maine, on your own terms. Okay, this first story, I don't want to reveal too much before we dive in, but back in 2019, a story about a woman from Norway, Maine, which is about 20 minutes from Lewiston, raised the eyebrows of neighbors and the state police. There was a flurry of local news coverage at the time, and a lot of questions about exactly what happened and why. Salt student Julie Conquest reached out to the woman at the center of the mystery and came away with a very personal account of her side of the story.
You know, several times when it was first done, I got about halfway down my steps and I could hear her. Several times I stopped in my tracks. She was calling me. Well, it's kind of scary, you know. It felt weird. It's a very weak calling. It's like she sounded, you know, before she, you know, got real sick, she got real weak. Then when I got to my car one morning, I heard her call again. She would say, "Nellie, Nellie, Nellie." And I stopped and I looked. I said, "May, is that you? I hear you." And it never happened again. Never happened again. I let her know that I heard her.
The first thing we heard was somebody had driven by and saw the coroner was there, so they knew something was happening.
It surprised me that someone had the guts to do it.
No, it's strange because, you know, it was on TV and that was it.
As far as I take on the situation, I guess it was really close friendship.
I remember maybe she was younger. She's a pretty woman. She had the bluest eyes, the blackest hair, and she always dressed neat, you know. And I could just see her coming out that door. But she see my car in her yard to pick her up and take her somewhere. "Hey, Nettie, I didn't know you were out here." I said, "I've been waiting 5 minutes." I said, "You're slow." I usually toot the horn, toot, toot. Or sometimes, toot, toot, toot. Shave and a haircut, 2 bits. I furnish all the rod and reels. And we go out there on that river, take our chairs and sit out there and fish. Oh, it was fun. We just went around fishing, just me and May. I said, "Let's get enough to have a fish fry." And I made hush puppies, corn hush puppies. Put them in the deep fryer and a big old pitcher of lemonade and just sit out there and eat that good old fish fry. We have two Southern ladies in New England, one from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, and one from Virginia. We're a family, you know. Nobody said nothing about no Southern around her. Because she said, you go back where you come from. Well, she tell them off now. She didn't care. That was the good times.
She didn't have nobody around the area, and she lived with her for a long time.
Yes, because she did say that the lady made her promise.
It's terrible, you know, what had happened. Well, I hope no one just killed them.
In the kitchen, and she said, Nell said, would you do me a favor? One day I was cooking some butter beans for green butter beans, sliced tomatoes, and a little bit of rice. I said, Meg, you know I'll do anything for you. She said, I want you to help me out in the yard. I want to pick out my spot where I want to be buried. I said, what? I said, what are you asking me to do, woman? Are you crazy? Bury you in my yard? She said, put me right here so I can see you walking down the steps going to your car. And I can say, well, good morning, Nellie. I said, I'd run down the road like hell. I said, no, don't you do that to me. She said, no, I'm just joking. I won't scare you. I said, why do you want to be buried in my yard? She said, that's where I want to be buried. And she went out there and showed me the spot. She said, lay my body right here. And she always said, Nellie, don't let me die alone. I have nobody but you.
Other stories we're following from around Maine this morning. State police are investigating the death of a woman whose body was found buried in the backyard of a home in the town of Norway. Investigators say the woman was in her 80s and likely died in the last 12 to 18 months. The body was taken to the medical examiner for an autopsy. Police haven't released any other details. They say they're still investigating.
I read on my phone an alert that she begged the person to bury her out back, and she still wanted to be with that person.
How do we know that this was this woman's wishes? I mean, that's what everybody's reporting. How do we know that?
I don't know how this woman could have dug a hole.
I thought that was, like, awesome.
And she said, Nell, I know I'm going. I want to be here with you alone, at peace. So I said, May, I said, what day would you like your bath? He said, I would like it once a week and like it on Friday. So I can look pretty for the weekend. I give her a good sponge bath and rubbed her back down with that lotion and stuff, you know. Made her feel good, give her massages and made her blood run, you know. She said, that feels so good. I bought her a white gown, a blue gown, and a pink gown. I said, which gown do you want? I want that pretty blue with the lace. I said, okay. She had blue eyes. I washed her hair, dried her hair, and took the curling iron and made her some curls around her face, you know. Put on a little bit of lipstick, put her powders on. Get you a little bit of powder. Smells sweet, the sweet lotion. She smelled good. And a little bit of lipstick and a little bit of rouge. I got the mirror. I said, look at you. I rolled up in the bed. Look at yourself now. She said, I look good enough to chase another man. She was a lot of fun. And she died with that gown on.
It's Corporal Robert Federico, the Norway Police Department. I have never encountered this before. No, I haven't. Sounds like the worst thing she did was bury somebody without a permit, if that's the scenario, if that in fact is what it is.
I wouldn't have known that myself. I honestly think, truthfully, I probably would have done the same.
I mean, I'm sorry. If this is what the woman wanted and this is all true, but we live in a world today where people know you don't just put somebody in the ground and bury them on your own. People have to know. That has to be reported. It has to be recorded.
But it also is kind of funny to hear all the different people and their thoughts of what it could be, you know, a lot of TV watchers.
I had to put her in the bed, and I heard a noise, a gurgling noise. And I jumped up. I said, oh, my God, something wrong with me. And I ran in here, and it was the death rattle. I said, oh, no, May, don't leave me. I said, don't do this. And she said, okay. And I called her by her hand. I said, May, I said, I saw that she was going. And I picked up a hand, and she wrapped her hand around mine. I said, how are you doing? She said, okay. Like that, you know, that's the last two things she said to me. And she wrapped her hand around mine and got a death grip. And she just went out, peaceful. And I stood up here and cried till daylight. Stood right there and cried. That's my best friend. And I lost her. I grew up, promise is a promise. And you wasn't a man or a woman if you didn't keep your promise. And I promised. And that was her wishes. And I carried them out to the T. She was in the ground about 18 months. And somebody called the state police. They knocked on my door one day and come out. I said, I don't have time to talk. I said, I have stuff in the oven and the stove cooking, you know. And I said, no. And he said, we are the state police. I said, whoa, wait a minute now. I said, you who? We're the state police. We want to come in and talk to you about May Shelton. I said, okay. I went to the hole and showed them. That's what she wanted. That was her wishes. I was only carrying them out. But they investigated around to see if I'd bashed her in the head. They was investigating to see if she was murdered, you know. Some people say, well, you know, Nell killed her, you know. And you know how people can get the word and exaggerate. And they finished the investigation, so ain't nothing we can do. I bet she was in here raising hell at her. Why are you questioning her? Why are you doing this? That was her. She was a little fireball. You leave her alone. She did nothing wrong. I can hear her. Made this playing. I knew she was here. I could feel her. She didn't let nobody bother me, you know. Uh-uh. She'd be down their throat in a second. She'd looking down on me.
That was the voice of Vernell Jackson from Julie Conquest's 2019 piece, Lay My Body Right Here. It's been 5 years since the story was originally reported. When we tried to follow up with Vernell to see if she had any updates, her phone number no longer worked, and she didn't reply to the letters we sent. So we reached out to the Maine State Police and the Attorney General's office to see if they had any updates. And they told us that Vernell was facing charges: 2 counts of theft by unauthorized taking, theft by deception, forgery, and abuse of a corpse. Then, at a plea hearing on September 26, 2025, Vernell was expected to plead guilty on all of those counts. But after pleading guilty to theft and abuse of a corpse, when the judge got to theft by deception, Vernell said not guilty on that one. That brought the hearing to a stop, and it invalidated the plea deal. We were able to reach Vernell's lawyer, who explained that this means Vernell now goes back to being presumed innocent and proceeding to trial. Okay, now we're going to turn to a story that spans centuries. It's a moving look at the power of remembering and how vital it is to hold on to and share the stories that make you who you are. In this case, the stories don't belong to one individual person. They belong to a whole people, and they were nearly lost. But Jamie Guerra talks to one woman who's made it her mission to make sure that doesn't happen.
Guskabe, a weak winaman, Widam Hegan, Nagazibi, Widam Tahan. Guskabe took his hatchet and finally he chomped it down. Chopped it down, a great big tree, a yellow birch. Then he felled it into the Aglabemo.
This is a story in the legend of Guskabe, the Penobscot culture hero that transformed the land to make a home for his descendants.
Yeah, Guskabe, they call him a man from nothing, and they call him a man in fancy, which means kind of like your imagination. And my neighbor said that she thinks he's the spirit of creativity.
And this is...
Liwizigal Dana Nujayao Onabi Menahan. My name's Carol Dana. I'm from Indian Island.
Carol is a member of the Penobscot, an indigenous tribe now based on Indian Island in Maine. She's reading from a collection of folk tales about Guskabe in both Penobscot and in English. In the story, his people are dying of thirst because of a monstrous frog called Aglabemo hoarding all the water. But...
Nelly Gawila Wikwesk Aglabemowal. Then on the yellow birch, as the yellow birch fell, it smashed Aglabemo to death. That is where the Penobscot River came to be from, and then all of the branches became rivers.
These folktales were largely lost to her community, until she stumbled upon them in the 1980s. And 2 years ago, alongside linguist Connor Quinn and English professor Margot Lukens, she turned these stories into a book called Still They Remember Me, Penobscot Transformer Tales, Volume 1.
But my friend said the world needs these stories. You know, that's how our people used to be. That's how they used to think. And it gives us a window into our people's thoughts and minds and how they were and what they valued. It's full of our stories, you know, that how we passed on our culture to the young was through stories.
And what makes this book really special is that it is the first and only book fully written in the Penobscot language. A language that, like these stories, was almost lost, but over the last few decades has begun to be revitalized.
How did the language come to be lost in the first place? Or?
Well, I think through the school, because there were elders that told me they got their knuckles wrapped for talking Penobscot when they were in school. And I think that whole, well, the state became a state in 1820. So around 1920, maybe, the state was harassing our people. They couldn't hunt and trap the way they were when they were making a living. So they moved down here to the island. And the bigwigs in the tribe went door to door and told everybody, we have to learn English now. We have to go get jobs in town. You know, it's what we have to do now. And the worst form of oppression is forgetting. And it seems like that's what people wanted us to do about our ways and who we are and how we are.
But Carol devoted much of her life to learning and reconnecting with the language and has spent the last 30 years teaching it across her community, often doing so with these very stories. We spoke about what the language has taught her and how in many ways it has Penobscot culture coded within it.
Gives you an insight as to how people looked at things, what they thought. You know, is what did our people value? And just gives me a more dynamic view of life, that everything's changing and everything's alive, and I don't know.
One thing that stood out to me was that in Penobscot, if you see an animal, you say, who is that?
Yeah.
But in English, you say, what is that?
Yeah.
And I think that's amazing.
Yeah, they're animate, like a somebody. They're like a person, yeah. Well, if you notice in the stories, it mentions those are our relatives, too. I think because of our relationship with the animal, You know, they were our life and provided everything for us that, I don't know, we were closer to them. But when you think about it, it was just such a beautiful way of life, you know, to give honor and consider these things as sacred and treat life as sacred.
When you started learning, I mean, what kind of emotions did that bring up for you when you first started learning the language?
I don't know, more like a part of myself. It was at a time in my life where I felt a deep loss. You know, my family was split apart. And maybe that was my way of hanging on to something. So I guess there was emotion there, you know. And I went to college so I could teach a language that was hard. You know, I was single, raising a family of six. But I did it, you know.
If you're wondering what that licking sound was, that was Carol's Yorkshire Terrier licking her ear, trying to console her.
What is your dog's name?
Jacques-Anum.
And what does that mean?
My soul.
I was reading online, and I saw it was your bio, and it said that you live with your spiritual advisor, Jacques-Anum. And I was like, wait, that's her dog's name. That's your spiritual advisor?
Yeah.
Okay, what does that mean?
Well, he's so enthusiastic, and he's got unconditional love, and he helps me achieve that unconditional love, because I return his love, and it's just, I don't know, he's someone to emulate. He's the best.
Anyway, back to Carol's story.
And I had to figure out, what am I going to do, you know, for all of us? Well, for my family. But in a way, it's branched out like I'm doing it for everybody, you know. Yeah. I think that's when I took it on, like that's my purpose in life or something, you know. And it just kind of grew from there.
Why do you think it's important to be connected to your past?
Well, if you don't know where you've been, you don't know where you're going. And it's who we are, you know, and how we are. I have a language teacher that said, story is the basket in which we carry our language. I love that quote.
How's the book being used in the community today?
I'm not sure. We took the book and we took it around to every house. We passed out a copy to everybody. I hope they're reading it to their kids, you know, at night. And I know my son does. And so I teach on a computer on Thursday at 10:30. I have a group.
Like a Zoom?
Yeah.
Who's that?
Sahigach.
Sahigach.
Yeah. Noaposan.
Noaposan.
So the 13 stories, the first 13 stories, we made a plays about all of those scenarios. And we had kids from Bangor and some from the island. It was great. And I told her, because we had talked about this earlier, of doing plays in the language. I said, we have to get the language in there.
What emotions does it bring for you today?
Well, one of wholeness, and I feel like I just want to rest. You know, my God, I've been pushing for 22 years.
These are the last few lines of the final story in the book, after Glooskabe has gone to the end of the land.
with the best squaws in Nagar, with the Delman, with Edamina, her Esquidair, Mikawida, her Maguk, who says now, today, whenever he is told about and sacred stories, Gusgabi stops working for a moment. And he raises his head and laughs. Then he says, yes, our descendants still remember me.
That was Jamie Guerra's 2023 piece, Still They Remember Me, which takes its name from the first and so far only book written fully in the Penobscot language. Jamie tells us that Carol retired a few years ago, which means she's had time to look around. She teaches a weekly Penobscot class and is working on volume 2 of Still They Remember Me. Her co-author Connor Quinn, a linguistics professor in Maine, is working on a Penobscot language dictionary, and Carol hopes to turn some longer stories into new graphic novels. This was episode 4 of our 6-part series. Our next episode celebrates an enigmatic figure.
Some people were set up over there and a guy said, oh, come look through my scope. Look at this bird. And it had these like sharp golden eyes and like it just looked really commanding.
There were all these people on the street looking at something. So I pulled my car over and I stopped and there was
the great black hawk. Because again, this is the only time this bird's ever been seen in the U.S.
Which delighted fans at first.
Facebook, Instagram, social media, eBird.
Until they began to worry.
Is it the polar shift? Is it global change? Is it just because he was wired wrong?
That's coming up in episode 5. You can listen to all of our Essential Salt episodes at mainpublic.org/storytelling. And while you're there, you can sign up for our new storytelling newsletter about the latest beautifully crafted, locally reported projects from Maine Public. Or drop us a line. We're eager for feedback and would love to hear what you think about Essential Salt and what you'd like to hear more of. I'm Jess Miller. Essential Salt is produced by Brenna Farrell with help from Lucy Santerre. Thanks to Isaac Kestenbaum at Salt. Thanks also to Theo Balcom. Our executive producer is Susan Tran. Audio mixing by Stephen Jackson. Essential Salt features original music composed by Q-Shop. You can find more music for storytelling at cue-shop.co. Support for Essential Salt comes from St. Mary's Health System in Lewiston, growing and evolving to best serve the needs of the community since 1888. Learn more at stmarysmaine.com.